Hey there, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9, coming to you from Sandusky, Ohio, for Codemash 2017, which is a wonderful conference. We're here in the game room. People are playing over here. You can even see John Skeet playing Settlers of Catan over there. Yeah, so just if he starts swearing or anything, we told him that we're recording. So, oh, he says, would I start swearing? Of course he would. It's John Skeet. But thanks so much for watching again. We are meeting with some people, talking about some awesome technology. I'm here with Tamir Drescher. How you doing, buddy?
Great. I'm doing really, really great.
So did you come all the way from Israel to Codemash?
Yeah. I came to speak here, and I'm really, really excited about it. It's a great conference and such great activities. I didn't imagine it's so big.
No, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really, really cool conference.
So you work at OzCode, right?
I work at Code Value. Which makes OzCode. It's our one of our products, right? And OzCode is an extension for Visual Studio. Basically, it gives a lot of tools and visualization on top of Visual Studio while you debug. Makes the entire experience much more fluent and fun.
And I had one of your colleagues go on and show us. It's a pretty cool product. You should check it out, obviously. CodeValue. Is it CodeValue.com where you can go?
.net.
.net. CodeValue.net. And we have the little wizard guy here just for you. But I also understand that you've written some books, and then you're also giving some awesome talks.
Right.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about what are the things that you like to talk about?
Well, I really like the whole concept of reactive programming and reactive systems. I wrote the book Rx.net in Action by Manning. Very soon it will be published. It's currently still in MIP, in the Early Access Program. And I came to Codemash to talk about reactive extension, how you can build responsive application with Rx, and about Akka.net, which is another concept of reactive programming, if you like, reactive systems. And I'm talking about the actor model and how it is being implemented with Akka.net.
So let's start first with sort of reactive. What does that mean? Because it's a different paradigm and people may not be used to it, the pull versus push model.
Exactly.
Why don't you sort of give us sort of the layout of what reactive means?
Right. So basically the whole concept of reactive programming is that you want to react to something. So instead of us going and checking about some state and all the time just doing this kind of interactive programming of checking something, doing something, and checking again, the reactive programming states that we're going to receive something in a push model, and we can react on top of it. So basically, you can create these kind of pipelines and queries over these reactive observables, which are kind of streams that push data into your application, and you can do all kind of nice things about them, right? So if we take it to a larger concept of reactive systems, we can say that we have a system that knows how to react to changes, to react to interaction with the clients, and be elastic, be responsive, and know also how to be resilient to all kind of failures that might happen.
So what does that look like in code?
Okay, so I have here a
standby. I had to cough. And it's okay because we're going to switch the screen.
Okay.
So you start to say, okay, I have here in code.
Okay. So I have here in code a very, very simple application. It's like the hello world of reactive extensions.
Right.
So basically what we see here is the ability to take something like a text box that I have here. This is the search box. And I'm going to convert the event of text change of the text box, and I'm going to create an observable from that text box. And after I got this observable, I can start making link queries on top of this observable. So for instance, one of the problems with the event of text change is that it doesn't give me the text itself. So I have to go and take it from the text box. So the select operation that I'm doing here, I'm going to into the search box and taking the text. Now I only want to consider those texts that are at least three letters long, three characters. So I have the where operator that will filter all those strings that doesn't have at least three values. Now, one of the things that we don't want to happen when we use an application is that we don't want to make a lot of queries to the service. We don't want to flood it. So the throttle the throttle operator will give us the ability to only consider values if some period of time has passed since they were entered. So in this case, I'm saying that half a second must pass. If another value has been entered by the observable, then we dismiss the previous one.
Got it.
Just consider this. then I'm going to make distinctive change, meaning that I don't want to do the search twice if it's the same value. Mm-hmm. And then I'm doing the search itself. I'm making an asynchronous call to my web service, and this will return me the result, which is a task. Mm-hmm. Now, if another search is coming, I don't want to consider this search, so I want to move to the next one. Uh-huh. And this is what the switch does. And lastly, I'm going back into the UI thread. This is what the Observe on Dispatcher does. And I'm subscribing to the result. This is what I got here. And basically, I'm just putting it back into the UI, into the search results. Mm-hmm. So in a few short lines of code, I created the full search application that knows how to handle a rapid application, rapid events that sure. happen. And I can go and just click here and make searches. And I have Fiddler that I open on the side, and we can see that if I'm, let's say I'm just pressing R, nothing happens. This is the filtering that I right. said that we're doing. And as I start typing, you see as I type, so it gives me the searches that we see over here. And because I'm clicking really, really fast, right, I only get those strings that have been passed a half a second before they've been allowed to move in the pipeline.
Got it.
Right. So taking that into a larger application, like a chat application that receives chat from all kinds of sources, all kinds of messages, or an application that is doing simulation and connected to IoT devices, we can create a lot of observables, a lot of streams that we can make correlation between them. We can join them together and build an application that is doing something really meaningful in a very short lines of code. Mm-hmm. And the best part about it is that you can always see what's going on. You can always just look at the code, and it's not like events that you need to register and you have all these kind of islands of code that are spread in your application. Everything is in the same place. So it's much more fluent and much more readable.
So for those that are looking at this and they're thinking, well, what do I do now? Now you're just reacting to events.
Exactly.
And then those events are functions that are somewhere. You're saying that if we're going to do reactive type stuff, we're going to get an observable, and that observable is every time something happens, it's just going to push it down this sort of stack.
Exactly.
Okay.
And a very nice thing to look at is that basically every time I put an operator on top of my observable, it created another observable. So basically this is the composition mechanism we have with Rx. So we can build new and advanced operators that do something with the observable they receive, and they just give us a new observable.
Got it.
That way I can reuse all these type of operators really, really easily. Mm-hmm. Just like we do with link for collections.
So this is pretty awesome. Is this like a library, or is this built into the .NET framework? Or where do you get these observables .fromEvent, and also these extension methods like throttle, distinct until change, switch? Because these are things that I haven't seen.
Great. So that's a great question. So iObservable and iObserver are both interfaces that exist inside the .NET framework since .NET 4. But the implementation you can do with them, it doesn't exist inside the .NET framework. For that, we need to go and take the Rx library, and basically we just need to go into NuGet, and we just need to look for the system.reactive. This is the name of the package that contains all the other packages that are belonging to Reactive Extension. This is now open source and part of the .NET Foundation. It exists for every platform that is supported by .NET, including .NET Core. Mm-hmm. And basically, once you get this library, you get access to all those operators that I just showed and much, much more.
I see.
And if you want to learn more, then the GitHub repository for Reactive Extension is available. And there's also Reactive Extension has evolved, and it's now available for every language and every technology right. that you might think of. And there is the kind of the portal of Reactive Extension, which is reactivex.io.
I see.
And I write about it in my book, basically for .NET, mm-hmm. but there are other books and other things that you can learn for other languages. And the nice thing is that if you know Reactive Extensions for .NET, you can apply it to other languages,
right.
and the syntax is basically the same.
So this is awesome, but I feel like if we move on to akka.net, some of right. this stuff is going to transfer over. Like the foundation of this is actually something in it. So tell us a little about akka.net. I've talked about it before with one of the guys that made it, mm-hmm. but I'd love to sort of get your take on it.
Okay, so ACA.NET is an implementation of the actor model. Mm-hmm. So the thing with actor model is that it's like an evolution of object-oriented.
Sure.
In object-oriented, we have objects. This is like the unit, the main unit that we use. So the problem with object-oriented is that right now, the way we use it is that the object must reside in the same memory area, right? In order for one object to use another object, they have to reside in the same mm-hmm. in the same memory. And there are a few things that really constrain us. So basically, when we want to do things that involve concurrency, with object-oriented, we have to start using locks.
Right.
And all this, when once you enter a lock, then you have a deadlock.
Yeah,
not too good.
Yeah.
So the actor model takes it one way further, and it's basically the actor is like an object, but this object right now has the ability to receive messages from other actors based on messages and not just an operation that is being executed. And the actor itself will consume each one of the messages and will process it in a single-threaded way. So there is no way that two messages will be consumed at the same time.
I see.
So by default, you work in a real a synchronized way between the actors. And the actor model also gives us ability to create hierarchies of actors. Mm-hmm. So basically, the actor model will allow us to do this kind of parallel computation in a really easy way. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what ACA.NET is trying to evolve. It's
like a
library to make concurrent application really, really easily. And you can spread your actors around multiple machines, and they can still communicate with each other.
I see.
And create clusters of actors, which gives us the ability to scale out really, really easily.
It's like the old Erlang sort of approach to things.
Exactly. Erlang is one of the first implementation of doing actor model. But since then, there are other implementation in other languages. In the .NET right now, there are a few implementation, and ACA.NET is one of them. It's still building up. It is being ported from Java. But there is already production-made systems that are made with ACA.NET,
awesome.
And it's really, really powerful. It gives you a lot of benefits that you can use. So we can see example.
Let's
also.
Do it.
So basically, to use ACA.NET inside your C# project, all you need to do is go and just add a NuGet package of ACA, mm-hmm. And this is the basic one. So once you do that, you get access to all kind of utilities and base classes. So the base class that I'm using is the reactive actor. Mm-hmm. And an actor in ACA.NET is a simple class. It just need to inherit from one of the base classes, in this case, receive actor.
Okay.
Once you get this, you can start a register to some messages types that you want to consume. So basically, to do that, I just need to use the receive method and specify inside the generic parameter that I want to receive messages of type echo message. And this is, again, just a simple class that has a single property, in this case, is a message. Mm-hmm. And I get this object, the message, inside a delegate that I can pass inside and specify what I want to do. So in this case, I'm just going to print it on the screen and just send it back to the sender. This is why it's the echo actor. Mm-hmm. You just send the message back. So once I'm inside the receive log, I have access to a lot of context, in this case to the sender itself. And I don't need to know exactly who is the sender. So this gives us an option to do all kind of really interesting messaging patterns that is not available in normal object-oriented programming. So I'm sending the message back into the sender. And in my main application, I created the actor system. This is the way to group multiple actors together mm-hmm. based on the same configuration. And I'm creating my actor right here with the actor off, and I'm specifying which actor I want, which is the echo actor. I give it a name. And then I can send a message to that actor. In this case, I'm using the ask, and ask is the way to do synchronize operation of sending a message. And I'm just sending my message over here, which is the hello world. Mm-hmm. And I'm waiting on the result back. And the result will be what the actor is sending us back.
Which is the same thing.
Exactly. Now, the very nice thing with the actor model and ACA.NET is what we call the location transparency. Right here, I'm doing it in the same process. But the only thing I need to change if I want to move this actor to another machine is basically just change my configuration and just specify that those actors are coming from another system residing on another another machine.
And is it using like a message queue or something? Or how does it use it? How does it actually persist those messages?
So each actor has its own mailbox, and the mailbox is kind of a queue that's started. And you can add all kind of attributes inside Akka.net to persist those messages. And so if the process fall and a crash and you want to restart it, then all the messages will come back.
Got it.
And the actor itself, being thread safe, can now hold state, and the state can be persistent. Mm-hmm. So basically, it also saves us a lot of the time that going and fetching things from the database takes us, because each actor is like an object saving its state, have its operation, have its behavior, and that way our application can really perform much better.
Got it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So if you have a system, this really like changes the way you think about modeling your domain.
Exactly.
Yeah, because you have to change, because generally we're like, okay, we're going to have the database system, and then we're going to have the middle layer, and then we're going to do some business. That's not how you think about this at all.
Well, you can still think about it that way, but I would say that when you start using with Actor Model, basically the architecture changes. So what was your business logic, which in the traditional way was kind of a monolith, that you have a web server that all the logic was inside it. So now you can break this monolith into multiple actors, each one with its own responsibility, and the actor can create other actors dynamically. You will still have the fronted as kind of a REST API, but then the messages will be sent into the appropriate actor to do its logic. And if needed, you can still save the and persist the data into the database, but you can create a like a mesh of actors running together in parallel on multiple machines, and each one will really concentrate on the logic that it needs to perform.
Got it. And that's pretty cool. I mean,
yeah,
because the more I think about it, now I need to start thinking about what are the actors in my system. And actors don't necessarily have to be people. They could be other machines.
Right.
They could be sort of, just, I don't know, an email system could be an actor. I mean, there's tons of ways to think about your software now with that kind of approach.
Exactly, the decomposition of your system can be even easier now, because basically if you have an application that needs to handle multiple users, so basically what we traditionally done is that we have the server, it receives some kind of a request, we go and pull out all the details about the user. Mm-hmm. Now you can create a dedicated actor just for that user dynamically and save all the state. So you can really build an application that is far more decomposed and still be dynamically and more agile.
That's awesome. And this example was super helpful, because I mean, I've heard about Akka. All the examples were super complicated, so this is really, really awesome. The last thing I want to talk to you about was OzCode. What are some things about OzCode that you want to tell people? I know I had one of your colleagues on about a year or so ago.
Yeah.
What are there some new things that we should look to?
Well, we are just about to release a new version of OzCode, and in the new version we'll have the capability to debug link queries much more easier than before. Mm-hmm. So basically, with OzCode, you can run a link query and just see for each of the operator what came in and what came out of each operator.
That's cool.
And we added a lot of options to tweak the visuality of OzCode, because we got a lot of concerns from people that saying that OzCode is great, but it really bothers the eye when you see it, because you have a lot of things that are displayed on screen. Mm-hmm. So in the next version, we'll give ability to make changes, and you can choose if you want to make it the same as today or much more light on the eye.
I see.
And be very much like the usual Visual Studio visualization that you see right now. And you can go and download the free trial on our application, and we have a YouTube channel for OzCode that you can see all the features and all the videos. I'm very soon the new version will come out, and I'm sure people will really, really like it.
I love it. So your book, what's it called again?
Rx.net in action.
Rx.net in action. It's an MEAP right now, early access preview that you can go to Manning and get that. And where can people get a hold of you, on Twitter?
So I'm available on Twitter, Tamir_Drescher.
Okay.
And also my blog, TamirDrescher.com.
Okay.
And that's the best way to get a hold of me and see the stuff that I provide.
Awesome. So we talked about RX for .NET. We also talked about the actor model with Akka.NET. Right. And then we talked a little about OzCode, which has a new version coming out. Make sure you check it out. Thanks so much for spending some time with us, Tamir. Thanks so much for watching. We are here in Sandusky, Ohio for CodeMatch 2017. My name is Seth Juarez, Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.